Hi, everybody. Welcome to today's live webinar, Demystifying Deliverability, Discover the Four Steps to an Improved Email ROI, sponsored by Message Systems and powered by Retail Online Integration and EM&C. I'm Melissa Campanelli, Editor-in-Chief of Retail Online Integration and EM&C, and I'm pleased to welcome you to today's event. If you're new to email marketing or have been doing it for over a decade, you may still be perplexed about your email deliverability, why it's important, and the effect it has on your bottom line. Yet there's really nothing mysterious about deliverability. Like any questions in direct marketing, the answers in the numbers and the formulas for connecting email deliverability to ROI are pretty straightforward. Today in this webinar, Dave Lewis, the CMO of Message Systems, will show you how to uncover the ROI value of your email marketing efforts and understand the impact you can have on your company's bottom line through better delivery rates. Specifically, you'll learn how to determine your revenue per delivered email, calculate revenue per delivery rate point, and estimate the revenue gain you can achieve with improved delivery. You'll come away with a clear understanding of the connection between deliverability and marketing effectiveness, the causes, effects, and costs of email deliverability problems, the metrics you need to track to benchmark your deliverability and improve it over time, the innovative technologies available today that promote excellent deliverability, and best practices employed by companies that achieve consistently excellent deliverability rates. Before we get started, let me introduce Dave Lewis, as I said, the CMO of Message Systems and the speaker for today's event. Dave is a 25-year direct marketing veteran who was the first deliverability czar for an ESP more than 10 years ago. He also spearheaded industry initiatives to educate marketers on the real nature of deliverability. He subsequently participated in early efforts to standardize email marketing metrics and build an identity system that could be associated with sender practices and establish accountability. Today, he serves on the board of the Online Trust Alliance and continues to champion marketing best practices, email authentication, and other issues critical to the future viability of online communication and commerce. Dave is also a frequent contributor to industry publications and speaker at events. Let me point out a few quick tips before Dave gets started on how to make the most of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the help widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelists. We'll be addressing select questions at the end of the hour, but you can send them in at any time. Please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can use all of the widgets and bells and whistles on this console. And speaking of bells and whistles, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn what all of the widgets on this console do and how you can customize your experience today. Okay, before we wait any further, take it away, Dave.
Thanks, Melissa. I appreciate your introduction. My gosh, I hope I can live up to all those deliverables for today's webinar. Sounds, yes, I have been around this topic for quite a number of years. Sounds like the Jurassic era when you talk about it. It has been almost a decade. It will be later this year since deliverability first reared its head as a fundamental problem for those of us that were engaged in email marketing. And at the time, I was with an email service provider, the leader in the industry at that point in time. But even from those beginnings, I have looked at deliverability as a means to an end as a direct marketer. It's, as I've seen it and how I want to talk about it today, improved deliverability is really about improved email effectiveness that allows you to stay connected with your customers, engage with those customers to generate revenue, build relationships. I've never saw or looked at deliverability as an end game in itself. It's a means to an end. So what I want to talk about today in terms of an agenda is talk about that email effectiveness gap, because I think we've tended to look at deliverability as this separate thing that's something we've got to contend with. And while that's true, it's fundamentally really about the effectiveness of the medium. So that's what I want to open with, and then talk about how do you determine your revenue potential and how do you realize that potential, provide a few words of advice, and then get into what are four steps or pointers for closing that effectiveness gap and realizing that potential. So let's get underway. You know, the way I look at it is, you know, you should ask yourself, are you suffering from an email effectiveness gap? And you notice that there's 20% average undelivered that's kind of going between, that's dropping in this hole between companies that are sending the emails and customers who are supposedly the recipient of those emails. And that 20% of permission-based legitimate email that goes undelivered, it's averaged that for quite some time now, and it's kind of hovered around that number. And it seems like it's been accepted across the industry as just a cost of doing business. And what I'd like to suggest to you today is that shouldn't be how we look at it. And keep in mind that that is an average, that some perform much better than that, mid-90s, even high 90s in terms of deliverability. And some, unfortunately, perform much worse, 50%, 60%, 70%. So you'll need to kind of look at that number and think of it as an average, but actually be thinking, too, about your own situation. So why should a 20% email effectiveness gap be accepted? What's acceptable about it after all? You know, if we had that kind of non-performance in direct mail, 20% of our direct mail didn't get delivered, or 20% of our SMS text notices didn't get delivered, I think we'd be pretty alarmed about it, and probably we both know what would the outcome would be, that maybe some heads would roll, particularly if we're talking about direct mail, given the cost of that medium. So why should email be treated any differently? Is it because it happens to be a low-cost medium in terms of sending, or is it acceptable because, you know, there's some presumed difficulty around managing deliverability? I don't think those are adequate excuses, especially when you start to think about what that 20% opportunity loss represents in terms of dollars and cents. The DMA pointed out in their latest report on email effectiveness compared to other channels that it has the highest ROI with $40.56 returned on every dollar spent in the medium. Search was a distant second with half that amount, and other channels fell off remarkably after that. So the question becomes, why do we pay more attention to the effectiveness in our other channels than we do email? And what I'd like to be suggesting today, of course, is that should not be the case. So let's start with understanding our real costs associated with the non-delivery, the non-effectiveness of email, cost in terms of the direct dollars and cents loss to your bottom line when the email goes undelivered, cost in terms of reduced customer satisfaction when the mail that they've requested, that they desire, that they expect doesn't arrive, whether that mail is a daily deal or a relationship discount or an important service notice, it does affect their customer satisfaction and their perception of your brand. And cost in terms of what happens when it doesn't, when email fails and you have to resort or your customer has to resort to a more expensive channel of establishing or reestablishing communication. So the first focus I'd like to take in this webinar is how to determine your revenue potential. You know, what a percent lift in deliverability equals what kind of gain. So think about it. I want to think about it in terms of each percentage point that we're able to improve in terms of your delivery rate delivers what dollar amount to your bottom line. That's the formula that I'd like to focus on and suggest that you'd be applying in your individual businesses. And then the second focus of this webinar is turning around and say, all right, fine. There's a potential that I want to recoup. Now, how do I go about doing it? How do I close the gap and achieve the revenue that higher deliverability or higher email effectiveness would mean to my bottom line? So that's fundamentally what I want to cover in this webinar. So let's start with the first focus, how to determine your revenue potential. And as Melissa said, you know, this is really about direct marketing. It is not about deliverability per se. It's about the effectiveness of the channel. And it really always does come down to the numbers. And as I said in the article that I wrote for Melissa's publication, you know, email deliverability is the first step in calculating your ROI for the medium. So let's talk about how you determine that revenue potential associated with email. The first step is pretty straightforward, and I'm going to run you through an example in a second. but you take your click rate in determining your revenue per delivered email times your conversion rate times your average order size to arrive at what the revenue is per delivered email. Okay, pretty straightforward. You then take that information and calculate the revenue per delivery rate point, and that's looking at how many emails do you send and whatever cadence you want to look at. I've chosen to do it by year here. So you look at the number of emails you send, times the revenue per delivered email times 1%. That tells you what your revenue per delivery point is worth. Then you got to do the hard math, and you really have to contrast that to where you are today in determining, well, what is my potential gain here? What's reasonable for me to achieve in terms of a lift in my overall delivery rate? And that gets into the second part of the webinar. But assume that you can improve it, and I want to suggest to you that you actually can and improve it quite substantially. You take that estimated delivery point gain times the number of points that you, or you take the number of points you think you can gain times the revenue per delivery point to end up with your total revenue. So let's move into an example to make this real. You know, obviously these numbers are going to vary by industry segment, whether it's B2B or B2C, and by individual companies on this call. But I've taken here an example that was based on some Lyra's information that suggested that for a highly targeted, personalized B2B or B2C email, the range of click-throughs was in the 10 to 20% ballpark. Okay, fine. I picked 15. It might be higher for your company. It might be lower. It doesn't really matter. Fill in the blank. So it's 15% times, in this particular instance, I've chosen 3.5% conversion. Again, it could be higher or lower. Times an average order size of 39.95, could be higher or lower again. But my point is that we're arriving at a 0.21, 21 cents revenue per delivered email in step number one in determining what it's worth. So moving that number into the next part of the calculation, step two, determining the value, the revenue value per delivery rate. In this particular instance, we're looking at 12 million emails sent per year. Well, that might strike you as high, it might strike you as low. We happen to work with a lot of major brands, email service providers, marketing service providers, social networks, and I can tell you they send much, much more. Millions, even billions per day being successfully delivered. So our estimate, just to give you a sense of where I'm coming from, is that about 5 to 7 billion emails a day transit our technology. So that's, I have a fairly large view in terms of what these numbers work out to be and what kind of volumes we're seeing. So 12 million per year is I think, a modest number. Times that 21 cents times 1%. You're looking at each point in your delivery rate as being worth, in this example, $25,200 on an annual basis delivered directly to your bottom line. So now let's take a look at the final step, estimating the revenue gain with improved deliverability. Well, I'm not going to assume that you're going to close the gap entirely and recoup all 20%, but let's say you're able to recoup 15%. And if you're sitting out there at 60 to 70% deliverability today, your gain could be much greater than that. So in this particular example, 15 points in terms of your delivery rate times $25,200 equals an annual revenue gain that you can take directly to your bottom line of $378,000. Now, obviously, I'm looking at this at a macro basis. You're going to want to apply this kind of formula to individual business units, to your individual campaigns, but the point is, this is how I would suggest you look at delivery and look at the effectiveness of your email channel by business unit, by campaign, and certainly by overall. So yes, as Melissa said, the steps are rather straightforward, but I'd like to suggest to you that they're deceptively so. They require you to know what your delivery rate is today, and that's not always easy or as straightforward as you might think. It's not always what you think it might be. I've seen many instances where clients are coming to us and saying their delivery rate is in the high 90s, where their click rates are in the cellar. And when you really unravel it all, you find that it's not their click rates that are the problem. It's really that they're overestimating their delivery rate by many multiples. So it's not always easy to really nail down what your current delivery rate is so that you can make this kind of comparison and make this kind of business case. It's also important to understand these results in the context of your organization. And what I would suggest to you is that you, if you run these formulas, the likelihood is that the number that comes out the other side is actually going to be a very low side estimate of your potential gain. And I'd ask you to consider the following points. If you look at email in the context of other channels, it remains the workhorse for the industry in terms of the digital communications channels. You know, the customer interactions, they typically start with email. At the Gartner 360 conference last week, they talked about this a bit. They start in email, and then they tend to bridge into alternate channels, such as text and IM and social. So my point here is that improving your email effectiveness, improving your email deliverability, will likely impact revenues that might be attributed to other channels. So you should look at those gains, and you should look at maybe taking credit, if you're able to improve your email effectiveness, for some of the revenue gains that might be attributed to those other channels. And the same thing applies to your retail outlets, your call centers, and your web store. Again, it's an attribution issue. And the other point to bear in mind as you're looking at your results here is the intangible cost savings that are going to be yielded by improving delivery. Higher customer satisfaction, and the use of less expensive channel, use of email instead of defaulting to more expensive channels. So the point is, you want to be grossing up your results based on where you see revenue gains and other cost saves. Okay. Moving into the second part of this, what I would like to say in kind of setting it up is that, you know, if it's not the revenue that moves you, then I would suggest the gains and the saves, then I would suggest you think about it in terms of improving marketing's overall contribution. I don't care what the average click conversion or order size is for your company, virtually every marketing organization is under pressure these days to demonstrate their contribution. And improving your delivery in email is probably one of the easiest ways to demonstrate and improve marketing contribution where it matters most, and that's right to your bottom line. And the point that I'm making here is, you know, if the DMA estimates that it's $40 and some odd cents today in terms of each dollar spent, if you were able to really effectively close that 20% effectiveness gap with your email, what might that number be? On average for the industry, it might be much, much higher than that, $48 for each dollar spent, maybe even more. So the question here becomes, well, what is your ROI for every dollar that you expend in email today, and where could you move it? So looking at the second part of this webinar, how do we realize the potential? There's a couple things that I want to comment on before we jump right into those topics. First is a few words of advice. You've got to look at, yes, the return side of your return on investment calculation. Yes, you want to look at the R. That really is what you should be focused on. But don't forget the investment either, because you have to make the investments that you make in improving your technology platforms, whatever they might be, however you might deploy, whether it's insourced, outsourced, or some sort of mixed environment, and the resources that you commit to managing deliverability, both in the marketing area and then in the technical area, those kinds of investments and how you look at maybe the non-monetary investment in terms of your practices, both marketing and technical, those are the things that are going to make a difference in terms of your success and whether you're really going to realize that revenue potential. But I think, as I pointed out in the article that I wrote for Melissa, you also have to truly believe that improved deliverability is A, important, B, part of your job, and C, achievable. And I want to talk for a second about each of those points, because as someone who's been around this industry for quite some time and have been around this issue for quite some time, you know, what I see continually is that deliverability is still, after 10 years, one of the top concerns that email marketers have. But to be frank about it, most email marketers, like most of them, unfortunately, don't segment. That was pointed out by the relevancy group. Some 50% of email marketers have a segment of one. They also don't pay close attention to their deliverability stats. An equal number don't. And they even know less about what drives those stats. So as a consequence, a lot of email marketers are caught up on this deliverability treadmill. They see and complain about the symptoms of poor delivery, bounces and blocks and bad placement and reputation damage and things of those natures, yet they don't delve into what are the underlying causes that, if they rectified those things, would enable them to improve the effectiveness of their programs, post a higher ROI, and sustain those gains over time. Instead, they tend to go for quick fixes and half measures that, if they're successful in getting them off the treadmill, it's only temporary, and they find themselves back on it before long. So the first thing is you've got to believe that it's truly important. Focus in on what your potential might be, and if you're not realizing that potential, what's causing the problems that you're experiencing. And we'll get into some of those in just a second. The second point is to really understand that, you know, just like there are technical aspects of almost any medium you choose, whether it's direct mail or SMS text or social, there are also technical aspects to email. And what I've seen too frequently is that email marketers defer to the IT department or their delivery specialists at their ESP or those that they may have in-house on matters that, frankly, they should better understand themselves. There's no question that there are some things that you really do need an expert for. For instance, you know, if you want to configure your mail servers or, you know, make sure that you're adhering to domain-specific rules and things of that nature, that's not what an email marketer's job is all about. But there are other aspects of email marketing, such as how do you segregate your mail streams? How do you set up a domain subdomain strategy? How do you manage authentication to assert your identity to the marketplace and make sure that you're recognized as a legitimate sender? How do you manage bounces and your reputation? Those are things that the email marketer had better understand and should be more actively engaged in, because frankly, they tie directly to your brand and how you manage your lists, and how you manage, ultimately, your customer relationships. So I would suggest to you that the time has come that we defer less to the deliverability specialists. Not that they're not important, but that we assume more of that responsibility unto ourselves in terms of really understanding the mechanics of deliverability and how marketing practices and such impact those results. The last part is, and it's partly as a result of that second thing I just spoke to, is in C, really believe that it's achievable. We've kind of come away with the perception after 10 years that, you know, deliverability is just too difficult for the average email marketer to comprehend. Hence, we need these specialists. We've kind of built up this aura that deliverability is somehow a black art, that, you know, it's just too difficult for email marketers to understand. And my net of that, having worked with a number of different brands and customers over the years, is that the net result is that we've allowed email marketers to disassociate themselves from their own practices that produce the kinds of poor delivery rates that are, you know, those are the things that typically drive you know, the results, you know, not targeting the right people, not delivering the right content, sending the same content to everyone, not keeping your list fresh and hygiene them properly. Those are the kinds of things that ultimately result in poor delivery rates, probably 95% of the time. So we've got thinking that deliverability is achievable, that it is part of your job, and obviously it's important in order to really achieve the result. So with that kind of perspective, I'd like to go into the second part of this, which is really talking about some of the steps for realizing that revenue potential of which I spoke. Now, each one of these topics could be a webinar unto itself, so I'm not intending to delve deeply into any one of these four areas, but kind of tee it up, and if there's desire to address it more deeply, we can do so in the Q&A, or we can come back with a webinar on each of these topics. But the point is that while not necessarily new, we need to start thinking of these things in terms of our metrics, because it truly is all about the numbers and improving the effectiveness of email as a channel. So I'm suggesting, and how I'm laying out these four steps, that it is a numbers-based approach. So from my perspective, it's knowing what your metrics are, managing your results to achieve those metrics or improve those metrics, mining your to, again, understand your metrics and improve them, and then enabling your metrics, and we'll talk about how that's done through technology itself. So those are the areas that I'd like to delve into next. Knowing your metrics. I hate to present you a wall of bullets here, but I wanted to get my points across, and it's long, but I'm not going to really follow the script here. This should go without saying. Of course, you should know your metrics, understand what's important to driving deliverability, and you should look at both positive and negative metrics. In other words, you should look at opens and clicks and conversion rates and all those positive things that contribute to the R, but also look at things like unsubscribes and complaint rates and bounces and all those things as well. So you would think that for a medium that's been around, yes, it's still in its infancy compared to direct mail, but these are not new issues. We've been talking about metrics since delivery first reared its head almost a decade ago, and you'd think that core metrics, such as your delivery rate, your open rate, your click rate, would be pretty standard by this point. Everybody would be calculating them the same way. Well, I participated in that Email Experience Council effort several years ago, and that was obviously not the case then, and unfortunately it's still not the case today. There are many different ways in which different IT groups or email service providers, though it's improved, there are many different ways in which they calculate these key metrics. So the issue becomes, if you're like many larger brands utilizing multiple deployment scenarios, some of it's done in-house, some of it's done through an ESP or maybe multiple ESPs, if they don't calculate the metrics the same way, you're kind of left with a vegetable soup type of environment where it's very easy to make your crucial business decisions based on data that's not reliable or consistent across the different deployment scenarios that you might have going on. So step number one is really not just knowing what the key metrics are, but knowing how they're calculated and taking a look at what came out of the Email Experience Council in terms of the same support adoption of metric for email recommendations. And I've given you the link here. Look for email service providers who adhere to those recommendations and interrogate your own IT department in terms of how they're going about doing the calculations. You know, I'm not going to apply any sort of motivation to the way these different companies or different groups may calculate the metrics, but I can tell you that some of them did strike me as being incredibly self-serving. Some were calculating delivery rates without including all failures. They didn't include certain types of blocks or certain kinds of failures like technical failures and such. Well, gee, at the end of the day, every kind of failure should go into your calculation of what your delivery or acceptance rate truly is. And your opens and clicks should be based on what that delivery rate happens to be. So if that core metric is calculated incorrectly, everything that stems from it is also misleading, and you need to keep that in mind as you're looking at your metrics. So know your metrics, follow your metrics. We'll talk about that in a second. But most important, understand how they're calculated and make sure that they're consistently applied across all the different ways in which you may deploy email today across your organization. So in terms of managing your metrics, I'd suggest to you that one of the first things that should be done is segregating your mail streams by business unit, by type of mail, and even by type of sender if you want to think about it that way. You're sending out mail across different business units that may have different reputations, and they may be pushing the envelope to differing degrees. You want to make sure that the results of one don't adversely affect the results of another. Very straightforward example, you want to make sure that your marketing emails don't impact the your transactional notices, your service-related notices that are also delivered by email. So this is all about segregating your mail streams and segregating them by the type of mail and by the type of sender. And I'd also suggest to you that this is a brand issue, because those domains and subdomains and your strategy for how you set them up and the IP addresses that are associated with them are all part and parcel of your brand as it's perceived by those that are receiving email from you, the ISPs and carriers on the other side. So in my estimation, in my experience, you know, most companies don't pay a lot of attention to this. They need another subdomain to support the latest marketing initiative. They just go off and create one. They don't think about commingling how their mail streams and what the net result is going to be. And they don't necessarily think about those issues when they're selecting their ESP and considering how they might be commingled, not just their own mail commingled, but how it might be commingled with other clients of an ESP. Those are all very relevant, and very relevant to the results you're likely to do. So assuming that you've done that, then, of course, you can move to the second point here, which is establishing the trend lines for each mail stream, seeking to isolate and address the causes for deliverability differences, such as targeting criteria, content, list management, and other such practices. But if you're looking at it just as one big, undifferentiated mail stream, it's pretty darn difficult to figure out what really is causing your results. So the first step is doing this just like you would segment anything else. You segment your mail streams based on various factors. Then, of course, you're going to be examining your delivery rates for each mailing and drilling down into the negative and positive variations from that trend line to either try to replicate your results if you've achieved great results, or avoid some of the unfortunate things so that they don't happen again in the future. So net in all of this, and this is pretty darn straightforward, we need to start thinking about deliverability as we would anything else in direct marketing. It's all about making it a cumulative learning experience. It's numbers-based, and we should get, over time, progressively better at it. So we've already talked a little bit about this, but the third one is mining your metrics, understanding the correlations between practices, both marketing and technical. But again, most of the issues tend to be related to the marketing practices around content relevancy and targeting and things of that nature. Again, this assumes that you've set up segregated mail streams and are really able to look at it and isolate the issues properly. The second point, it would be a much more perfect world if the ISPs and carriers had and applied some sort of consistency in how they delivered back to us their notices of non-delivery. But they don't. And that's, a database marketing challenge of some magnitude. But whether it's done by you or done by your ESP, the second point is all about normalizing the data so that you understand that this kind of failure report from ISP number one is the same as something that's reported slightly different from ISP number two versus three versus four. And really understanding which ones of those ISPs, based on their percent incidents in your particular list are important to your business in delivering results to your bottom line. But the first point is normalize the data and then organize the data into actionable categories. You know, it isn't truly helpful to have 25 different categories for bounces. You need to be able to reduce it down to the types of bounces that you're dealing with, hard bounce, soft bounce, technical failure, whatever, and then look at the subcategories within it and be thinking in terms of organizing the data in terms of what is actionable. What action do I take if I see this kind of failure? Or maybe also, what does this kind of failure signify to me? And group the data in those logical categories so you can actually see the issues. For instance, a hard bounce, something like an unknown user, that's a particularly toxic type of bounce. And if you get enough of them, you're going to find yourself blocked, and it's going to affect your reputation and your future ability to deliver your email. So obviously, the first order of business is you want to identify those things, and that all gets back to how you organize your data and the rules that you associate with those categories. You want to get them off your list as soon as possible, but in terms of mining your metrics, then you want to really go to the third point here and find out, how did they get on my list in the first place? That's the question you need to be asking yourself once you get them off. And often this will point to deficiencies in your data capture, your partner programs, your list hygiene. Maybe it's a list rental that you've brought in, and the issues are on their side. But the point is, you need to find out and apply the same discipline to fixing those problems, and look to discover other correlations, such as the correlation between your spam complaint levels and the appropriateness of the content you're sending, the targeting criteria that you're applying, and even the level of customer engagement. And if you find those things to be off, then you should be taking action accordingly. For instance, if your level of customer engagement is low and it's consistently low, then by continuing to mail people content that is obviously not relevant to them or appropriate to them at this particular point in time, you're just begging for a complaint, and sooner or later they will. So you need to be thinking about how you should you be engaging with those customers separately. So net-net of all of this is, yes, mine your metrics to improve your marketing effectiveness, and my belief is that if you do so, it will improve practices, and that will ultimately improve your ROI. And the secret, as I found, to good email deliverability is as simple as good marketing. Yes, there are some technical aspects to it that you need to have covered, but frankly, applying the same discipline to this medium that are applied to others will ultimately yield success. Moving to the last point, enabling your metrics. You know, you can know everything about marketing and technical best practices, but more and more these days, it's not just knowing those things, and it's certainly not your good intentions around those things that really is going to make a difference in terms of your bottom line, but your ability to invoke those marketing and technical best practices in your messaging platform itself. In other words, technology is becoming the differentiator for market leaders in email marketing. Those that are successful at it are going to be those that are leveraging the latest in terms of technological advancements. And I want to give you a couple of examples here. For instance, in terms of deliverability, you know, the standard operating procedure for years has been, if I had have a deliverability train wreck, you know, I'm going to have to deal with it. And the sooner I know about it and the causes of it, then I'll be able to go back and figure out what's going on and go back to my ISP or carrier on bended knee and see if I can get them to let me back in. Well, this after-the-fact action is frankly no longer sufficient. The technology has advanced to a point where you can actually apply the rules on the fly so that you don't experience that deliverability train wreck in the first place. So what that is suggesting to you is that the standard should be, reading your blocks, reading your bounces, reading your complaints as they are occurring in real time and being in a position from a technology standpoint to take actions based on what you're seeing, whether that means suspending the program because you're getting too darn close to that complaint threshold or that bounce level that's going to impose a block on you, or throttling it down, or changing your cadence on your retry rate. That's what technology is capable of doing these days. And that kind of adaptive approach to managing your deliverability is really, I think, a key element to achieving an improved delivery rate. Doesn't in any way suggest that technology is a solution or a substitute for good marketing practices. But if you've made a mistake, it allows you to detect that mistake and take action on that mistake before it does significant damage to your delivery rate or your reputation. And by the way, that same on-the-fly approach to how you respond to things also applies to cross-channel communications where the customer might respond to you in text, and therefore you want to now bridge from email over into text or into social and follow the conclusion, follow that conversation to its ultimate conclusion, which hopefully is a sales result. So you need to take a hard look at technology because it's not just it is the enabler of best practices, and it's the enabler, I think, of market leaders as sophistication in email continues to evolve and as we move into kind of a cross-channel mode of communicating with our customers. So as you assess your deliverability game plan, make sure that your messaging technology is a big part of it, and that however you're deploying today, whether it's insourced or outsourced or mixed, that you can scale to what your plans are, what your needs are, and what the future demands of your business might require. So at the bottom line, you know, kind of closing this off so we can leave a few minutes for questions here, it is about closing the email effectiveness gap. That's what I think really deliverability is all about, and enabling you to realize the untapped revenue potential that you've got to improve the effectiveness of your email programs, improve your engagement with your customers, and of course, ultimately deliver revenue to your bottom line. And that's, as a direct marketer, how I think we should be looking at the deliverability challenge. And what would certainly please me to no end is after 10 years of talking about this challenge that we finally get ourselves to a point where we can move beyond it and focus truly on what I think most direct marketers really are all about and would prefer to pursue. So, Melissa, with that, I would like to turn it back to you and entertain any questions.
Great. Excellent. Thank you so much for that great, thorough presentation, Dave. Excuse me. There's a lot to deliverability, and you laid it out really nicely for the listeners. There have some questions have come in, but I want to urge everybody on the line, excuse me, to please continue to send questions because we're going to be answering them now for the next 10 or 15 minutes. Some of the questions sort of related to some of the earlier charts and stuff, but I figure we can always go back to them. So let's start out with the most general sort of question about some of your statistics and charts. What is your definition of delivered, which I actually think is a good question in general. I guess a lot of people have that sort of question. Like, what does delivered mean to you? Does it mean bounce, bulk in your what is in the calculation?
Well, it's a first of all, it's a two-step approach. You need to look at what was accepted by the ISP or carrier, and then you need to look at where that mail that was accepted was placed. Did it get into the inbox? Did it land in your spam folder? Did it go to junk? Whatever. Because if it got to one of those lower destinations, you know, it's all about communication, connecting with the customer. So if it got into the spam folder, junk folder, the likelihood that it's actually going to be seen or read by me is pretty darn low. So that's an important corollary to the topic of deliverability. But when we talk about delivered, what we're really talking about is acceptance by the the ISP or carrier. So simply put, that means you had 1,000 emails that you sent out. These are the ones that actually left your system, not the ones that failed before they left. So you sent out 1,000, 500 of them got through, 500 of them were bounced, were blocked, whatever, okay, and for a variety of different reasons. My view of deliverability is it's sent minus all forms of failure. I don't care what the failure is, okay, and what is the net result is delivered. So it's a very simple approach. Hmm. Now, that middle part is really where you need to mine your results. You had 500 that failed. Those need to be categorized into different types of failures and then subcategorized so you can look at what kind of hard bounce this was. Because each one of those major bounce categories, and this gets into normalizing the data and then organizing it, has likely contributing causes and likely corrective actions. So that's the approach from a kind of conceptual viewpoint that I would suggest one take.
Mm-hmm. Great. There are a few other sort of specific questions about your charts, but I'm sure you'll be happy to answer some of the, you know, some of the more specific questions after the fact. Correct, Dave? We'll send you
the
questions.
Yes.
Okay, great. So let's move on to some of these other questions. Let's see. One of our listeners said that her data is spread out across her organization, and it's hard for her to have an overarching view of her customers. So what's the best way to get her data consolidated?
Well, as a direct marketer, I think the number one thing is to seek to apply a unique identifier to all your data sources. So in other words, if you've got multiple data sources, it isn't so much, my belief is that you're never going to get all your data in one pile. That's been the unfulfilled promise of CRM since Moby Dick was a tadpole. It's probably never going to happen. Okay, but what really is important is that you associate a unique identifier with each of your customers so that you can connect that data in disparate data sources across the organization. And then seek out the kind of technology that allows you to access that data wherever it might reside and let it live wherever it wants to live. But if you got the unique identifier, you can still capture, you can still connect to the data in real time and make your decisions in real time. And that's the way I think you want to proceed. And that's how you connect your data across the organization is through that unique identifier.
Okay, great. Excellent. There's some questions about an ESP, and I know that you have some experience there. So, for instance, what are some red flags to look out for when taking on a new ESP, and what happens when an ESP gets hacked?
Oh, boy. Well, undoubtedly I'm going to get myself into trouble on this. Many of our clients are ESPs and MSPs and some of the biggest in the business. So, yes, I definitely have points of view on those things. You know, we're not in the business of critiquing the different ESPs, but I will respond to the question. What to look for in selecting an ESP as it relates to, you know, this issue around delivery? The first order of business is, well, gee, I'm going to you presumably because you've got the technical wherewithal to manage the at least the technical aspect of delivering my email for me and giving me the reporting back that tells me how it's done. So the first order of business, though, I would say is manage your own expectations of the ESP. And by that I mean, you know, fundamentally you own the relationship with the customer. You know, an ESP is not going to be able, they can advise you and provide the consultation on how you should target and what content might be appropriate and the cadence and all those things. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, your marketing practices are yours. So it's not the ESP's responsibility to manage that part of it. And I do find that in the majority of cases, the high majority of cases, it's usually the marketing practices and the relevancy of the content that's being sent and how the list is hygiened and where it came from and those types of things, which are all in your control, unless you've authorized the ESP to do it for you, that really make the bottom line difference. So manage your own expectations in terms of what you expect of your ESP and what you expect of yourself. Okay? As it relates to the ESP, if they're responsible for giving you the reporting based on what programs you're pushing out through them, then make sure that they're adhering to what the DMA's EC Council has suggested, okay? That make sure you understand how they are calculating deliverability, what goes into the formula, how they're calculating opens and clicks and things like that. And if you're comparing one ESP to another, or you're comparing an ESP to how you might be doing it in-house, make sure that you're comparing apples to apples when you're making those comparisons. Otherwise, you're going to end up making decisions that are ill-founded. So that's the first part of the answer. The second part, relative to hacking of an ESP, and I assume what we're talking about here is the incidence of data breaches, and yes, I've been pretty vocal on that topic as well. I don't view this as an ESP versus enterprise issue. Let's be honest. Your data is no safer behind your own firewall than it is behind the ESPs. There have been probably many multiples more breaches on the enterprise side than on the ESP side. Both are vulnerable, and why? Because that data about your customer is valuable. And if you can use it to appropriately target people, so can someone else who's using it for abusive purposes. So wherever it lives, it is vulnerable. So, yes, you need to be sure that you understand what sort of protections the ESP has in place. You need to understand what sort of protections they have in terms of protecting their own network from abusive email coming in that might compromise login credentials and things of that nature, and screening the email that's going out so that they can detect abuse in the email stream before, you know, it reaches the end user and it's becoming, you know, a data incident is becoming, before it become a data incident becomes a data disaster. Yes, you need to look at those things. You need to look at the connection between yourself and the ESP and make sure that that's secure and that you change your passwords. Things, you know, part of the responsibility in an ESP client relationship, frankly, rests on the client side too. Many of the breaches that are most difficult for the ESPs to respond to are those that actually originate on the enterprise side. The enterprise has been compromised. They've opened up an email that's stolen their login credentials to the ESP. That person or individual logs into the ESP pretending to be you, and then the ESP looks at it and says, well, gee, everything checks out here. And then they log in and begin to send out, abusive email under your name and also under the ESP's name and through their pipes. So, you know, it's not a simple answer that you can say, all right, this is the ESP's responsibility. If you're using an outsourced provider, it's a shared responsibility, and I would not assume that outsourcing is necessarily safer than insourcing. It's all about how both parties, as part of the ecosystem, have to protect their networks and protect their data.
Okay, great. moving away from the ISP-ESP stuff for a minute here, you had mentioned in your presentation that good marketing, actually it was a big part of your presentation, that good marketing is a big part of deliverability. But can you just explain that a little bit more? I mean, are you talking about creative execution or adhering to customer preferences, both, either, neither? What's your take on that?
Now, this could be a topic unto itself and maybe several webinars around this topic. It's all of those things. From how you source your list and build your list over time, so it's around data capture and address hygiene and making sure that you're mining your data to ensure that your customers are engaged, and how you manage those that are less engaged than others, and how you marry that with your targeting criteria for different offers and making sure that the content is relevant to the preferences that they've expressed nothing's worse than asking for their preferences and then not addressing those preferences in the content you send them, or also making sure that the content that you're delivering is relevant to those implied preferences that might show up in terms of their behavior. All of those things are part and parcel of marketing practices. And they're, you know, I would suggest to you they're no different than direct marketing in any other channel. I think the beauty of it with email is that you have the ability to address those issues and address them in a much quicker turn than you do in a channel such as direct mail. The problem I've found is that we tend not to look at those things because it's so cheap and easy. Go ahead and continue to blast out the same content to everyone, and, you know, we can still get a decent return. But ultimately what we're doing is shortchanging ourselves in terms of building the relationship with the customer that's going to pay dividends over time. And I think if you really do the numbers, and the relevancy group, as an example, has the numbers in terms of contrasting, you know, a highly targeted, segmented program to one that's not, you're really shortchanging your own company in terms of bottom-line results.
Definitely. Let's see. We have a little bit more time for some questions. One question that I found interesting was just about sort of getting into the – I know there's a lot of controversy over getting into the Gmail inbox, the relevancy issue. Is there a good way to test Gmail inbox deliverability? It's so sensitive, and, you know, how do you get in the inbox there?
Gee, that's
that's the $64,000.
Melissa, I'd be honest if I said, I'm the best expert on that aspect of deliverability at a domain specific level. I'd be glad to give you to refer whoever the questioner is to someone who can give him that specific answer. It's around Gmail deliverability and best practices there.
Yep. So, okay, great. Let's do another ISP question. Are there any proactive ISP relationship building strategies that marketers should know about, getting on whitelists, et cetera, or is that something that can be automated today?
You know, that's a good question. We happen to deal on both sides of the business, if you will. We deal a lot with brands, social networks, ISPs, MSPs, but we also deal with a lot of carriers and ISPs use our technology too. So I think fundamentally, you know, what is the ISP carrier looking for? They have subscribers to their network. They're concerned about protecting their own network, of course, and compromising that network just as much. In fact, they were more concerned about that much earlier than enterprises and ESPs are. This issue around data breaches and such is kind of a late arrival to the ESP enterprise space, but the carriers and ISPs have been dealing with it for quite some time. So what's actually at the origins of the whole deliverability issue is their ability to differentiate the good players from the bad. Okay, so what are the ISP's carriers really looking for? They're looking for you as a sender to be a good guy. And what does that mean? It means that you're sending email that their subscribers want and desire to receive. That's fundamentally important. So that's important to them because they're looking to retain those subscribers and grow the relationship on their side. So if they're allowing email into their domains that countermand that mandate they've got to protect their own customers from spam and mail they don't want to get, that's not healthy for their relationships with their customers. So they try to stop it. So, you know, understand what they want. They want satisfied subscribers. Now, the key part of all this is what I mentioned earlier, being able to differentiate the good guys from the bad guys. That's where understanding the identity of who is sending the mail, why it's so darn important, particularly with the breaches that are happening now, even on the enterprise and ESP side, that you authenticate your email and that you check that authentication both on inbound to your domain and make sure it's authenticated on the outbound. So that if you are a good player and you have a good reputation, the ISP or carrier that's receiving your mail knows it's you. That's fundamentally important. From the standpoint of the ecosystem, solving the identity issue and then associating that identity with the reputation of the different players is really a crucial issue, and it's really been accented by some of the data breaches we've seen. So I'd say it's a two-part issue. I don't think there's any magic bullet to improving your relations with the ISPs. It's as simple as exercising good practices so that you deliver to their subscribers what they want to get and making sure that that ISP, when you knock on their door with your email, knows it's you and that you've got a good reputation and one that they can trust and trust to deliver the email their subscribers want.
Excellent. Well, I think that's about how we're going to have to end. Let me just remind the listeners that Dave would be happy to answer any questions that we didn't get to today. So he'll be getting back to you separately. But in the meantime, I'd like to say on behalf of Message Systems and ROI at AMC, I want to thank you for attending today's webinar. Be sure to check out our webinar page to get more information on all of our archived and upcoming webinars. And if you wouldn't mind, please take just a minute to fill out the brief feedback survey that will appear on your screen next. We would be so grateful. Your feedback will influence the webinars we bring to you in the future. So hope to see you at the next EMC or ROI webinar. Thanks. Bye-bye.